Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, the Supreme Court is hearing a batch of pleas seeking a review of its judgment last year where it refused to accord legal recognition to same-sex marriage. The Supreme Court has refused to allow an open court hearing this time around. On the show this evening, petitioners in the case, what are the grounds that they believe exist for this case to be reopened? Is this the final battle as far as they are concerned? Also on the show, the sky is not the limit for the burgeoning space technology relations between India and the United States. We have an interview with the US Ambassador Eric Garcetti speaking to my colleague Pallav Bagla. The stars are aligning as India and US are like buddies in space, is what he says. There's a lot which is coming up in terms of collaboration in the space sector, India and the United States. Pallav brings you all the details in that very special interview. And finally, Indian 2 is set for a release on Friday. Kamal Hassan and Shankar team up after 28 years. This is NDTV's big exclusive interview with the director S. Shankar speaking to my colleague Sam Daniel. That's later on this program. But let's start our big focus. It's something that we've been tracking now for the last 1 year very closely, the possibility of same-sex marriage in India. At the moment, it is illegal after an order of the Supreme Court. But the court is presently in the process of deciding whether this hearing can in fact be reopened. It's not in open court. It is being heard in the chamber of the Chief Justice. Joining us now to look at what the legal arguments are, because they are important legal arguments, and whether it is a court which can decide this or whether it is the government of the day and parliament and legislation which can actually result in rights being granted or not being granted is what needs to be looked at. Utkarsh Saxena and Kotia join us. They are the petitioners in this case. Mihira Sood also with us, Rahul Ishwar and Deshratha Nigam as well. Thank you all very much for being with us. Utkarsh, let me come to you first. You know, I was going through the petition quite carefully and let me quote a little bit from that, where it said the majority opinion mischaracterizes the petitioner's case as being about a freestanding fundamental right to marry instead of a challenge to the discriminatory exclusion of queer couples from an existing secular legal regime of marriage. In other words, what you are arguing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the ability of couples to actually marry each other, gay couples to actually marry each other, already exists within the present system. How is that so?
Vishnu, so the challenge of the review essentially is that the court says that we are asking for the creation of a new institution or a special right to marriage. And our disagreement with that, and why that's why we think this is a grave error apparent on the face of the record, which is why it's worthy of review jurisdiction, is that the right to marry already exists. The institution already exists for secular marriages. It's called the Special Marriage Act. The question that arises is, can the government or the parliament pick and choose who it grants that right to, especially post Naftej Johar, when sexual orientation is a ground for constitutional discrimination under Article 15. So the first ground essentially is that the petitioners are not asking for the creation of a new institution of marriage. It's only asking for access to an existing institution of marriage, and hence essentially is a case of discrimination. But the second ground, and I think this is quite unique for even the Supreme Court, is that this is the first time probably in the history of the court that the court has acknowledged that there is a violation of our rights, that this is unconstitutional discrimination that the petitioners and the queer community face, but doesn't go the full distance and offer our remedies because it believes its hands are tied and that this is the domain of the parliament. This has never happened before, and in our humble submission is an anathema to our constitutional jurisprudence, because there is no right if there is no remedy offered, and it is the duty of the constitutional court to offer remedies the minute citizens demonstrate constitutional violations.
Okay.
So that's the second fundamental.
Okay, hold on to that thought. I know you've got many more arguments. I'll come back to you. Deshratha Nigam, the key point that Utkarsh argues can be summarized as the right to equality, right? He's arguing along those lines. And therefore, the key question which arises is, can queer couples be excluded from a legal regime purely on the basis of their sexual orientation? Where is equality in that case? How would you
Well, Vishnu, let us be clear on certain fundamentals, that the Supreme Court, all the five judges unanimously had refused to accord the same status as the heterosexual marriage to the same-sex marriage. And all those two judgments out there, the minority ones, were concerned about the rights. How can that be worked out? And therefore, these are not fundamental rights. They said these are statutory rights given under a particular statute. If one talks about a special marriage act, it's a secular act, no doubt about it. But it will, the marriage, if you look at the section 4 and see, it is between the heterosexual couples, which says age of male has to be 21 and that of female has to be 18 years. So what people read is an isolation, marriage between persons, but it has to be read with 4C, which says, which is between male and female. Even the restitution of conjugal rights is between husband and wife, and all the divorce petitions will be filed by husband and wife. So the statute is very clear. They have not created this class of marriage. And that is what the Supreme Court is saying. We cannot grant you something which is not a statutory right under any of the existing laws. And therefore, it is falls within the parliamentary domain. We cannot direct that creation of a right to the parliament or to the government. Yes, nobody is denying that they have certain claims. The rights that the Supreme Court wanted to protect, that the governments can look into. However, if somebody, any political party, wants to move a particular legislation on this, which a lot of political parties, you know, say outside the parliament, trying to, you know, cater to a particular class of people politically, but they do not move any bill in the parliament. Even if they want to move a bill, these are...
Okay, let me interrupt because I understand. Let's keep the political argument aside for a moment. I know what you're saying. We'll come to that later on. Meera, just on the point that Deshratan Nigam says that the existing laws are for heterosexual marriages and that there cannot be any reading other than that. Is that your interpretation as well?
And the existing laws are certainly for heterosexual marriages, but there's absolutely no reason why it should remain that way when it is patently discriminatory and exclusionary, and there is absolutely no rational basis for that kind of law. I mean, we have a constitutional right to equality, and that constitutional right to equality has to come into play when we are analyzing statutes, when the courts are scrutinizing the validity of statutes. There is really nothing so remarkable in the court saying, look, this is an extremely narrow category of people that, you know, this right is being extended to, and it needs to be expanded.
Okay.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have a constitutional right to equality. We have a constitutional right to various aspects. The court had said in the previous judgment, with the judgment under review, which I disagree with, that there is no fundamental right to marry. I think that that is taking a very hyper-technical view of it. I mean, the court has in the past said we have fundamental right, you know, looked at right to life so expansively, said we have fundamental right to sleep and water and so many things that are not explicitly mentioned. Surely the court cannot be blind to the fact that marriage holds a certain place in our society and that it is very much an aspect of dignity and the right to enjoy one's family life in our society. Whether or not it should be is another matter. You know, when we decriminalized homosexuality, it could not have been about the right to exist merely or the right to have sex alone. When we say it is decriminalized because it is discriminatory, it has to mean that people, homosexuals, have the same right to dignity, the same social rights, the same right to enjoy a family life. And the fact of the matter is that people are already living together. People are already raising children through adoption as families. Why wouldn't recognition of the right to marriage simply, strengthen the institution of family, make it better for the rights of children in those situations, and overall strengthen the relationships that we as a society go on repeating are so fundamental?
Okay. Rahul Ishwar, one of the points that the petitioners are saying is they point out that the Supreme Court in its earlier judgment had said that it's not within the ambit of the court to actually decide finally on whether same-sex marriage was unconstitutional or discriminatory or wrong, rather. But they did leave the remedy at the discretion of an executive committee. In other words, the government in some way, shape or form. And the argument was that it was left to an executive committee because the resolution of this was too legally complex for a judicial declaration or an interpretation.
Yes.
How would you respond, Rahul, to those who say that that argument of the court itself or that position of the court is wrong? Because if there is something which is unconstitutional or if there is anything which is discriminatory, right, and the court has not said that things are not discriminatory, how can the court then delegate the task of remedying discrimination to the executive? In other words, if there is discrimination, it is the job of the court to fix it. The court cannot pass it on to anybody else.
Vishnuji, two submissions. First of all, as a civilized society, nobody should have homophobia. That's a given. We have evolved past that stage, and that is a totally acceptable position. At the same point of time, there are a lot of reasonable people who are having respectful divergence with the whole idea of the status of marriage being accorded to the homosexual couples. One or two reasons.
No, but Rahul, I'm asking you a very basic question. I know the larger arguments, but my question is this. Do you believe it is right for the Supreme Court to, on the one hand, say that, yes, there are instances of discrimination or there are aspects of this which are discriminatory, and yet say that, okay, sorry, we put our hands up in the air, let this be decided by the government or the executive? Don't you see that as being a problem when the job of the court is to address legal infirmities or discrimination?
Let us be very honest about this. It is less about technicality, and the question is about larger social acceptance.
But the law is about technicalities, my friend. We exist on the basis of those technicalities.
The entire premise here is different. Let us be honest about it. The entire premise here is social acceptance should come precede the legal acceptance. Social acceptance should come first, and legal acceptance can only come after. That's the premise that is followed. You can criticize that rationale, you can critique the base, but this is the rationale that is implicitly used in all these arguments. So Supreme Court has rightly said, let there be social acceptance first, and then the legal acceptance has to come. That's the reason why the parliament has to take a call. And let me be very categorical about this. A huge majority of people don't have any virulent opposition to it. At the same point of time, there is a lot of question in their minds. There is a lot of inhibition in society. So the right way for the petitioner is to educate the society more, create more sensitization, awareness, engage with the civil society more, engage with the other communities who don't accept and agree with them. The court route, they may have a cause, but they don't have a case, is the reality that we see in the court. Yes, the cause can be debated, discussed, but the case, I doubt whether it will be accepted in this form by court, but they should largely create awareness and sensitize people. That is the real way ahead. Otherwise, through the dictates of a law, I doubt whether any result will come through. And there are a lot of reasonable people without homophobia who opposes the entire paradigm of homosexuality, queer community, or people coming together.
Okay.
The Vokes may be accepting it, but the huge majority is yet having inhibitions and apprehensions, which needs engagement and more awareness.
But the court doesn't base laws or legal judgments on what, the larger number of people have to say. It's not... The court doesn't, believe on majoritarianism. They believe on what's right and wrong according to the laws. Right? So that's what we're looking at over here. It's not what the large number of people say. I mean, legally, is that a tenable position, Mehra?
Yeah, absolutely. Tradition and social mores cannot dictate constitutional morality. And the courts are meant to be a check on majoritarianism. They are not supposed to enable majoritarianism. Fundamental rights cannot be subject to the will of the mob. Also, I want to push back on the idea that there has to be social reform first, and the laws will simply have the role of reflecting existing norms. The law has a very serious and important role to play in reforming society as well. Law is a very potent weapon in the hands of the state to reform society. We have used, if laws simply had to reflect existing norms, we wouldn't have anti-dowry laws. We would not have laws against domestic violence. So many of our gender equality laws would not exist because they do not reflect existing social mores. But we recognize a right and wrong, right? We recognize the constitutional morality of certain positions, and we understand that the law has a role to play in reforming society as well. So legal reform and social reform are not, antagonistic to each other. It's not that one can only come after the other. They go hand in hand. And certain things are, you know, violations of fundamental rights are too important to be, you know, left to wait until society reaches a certain position. And, you know, just on the issue of the of this present petition, I think it is not a question of creating a new right. In fact, this is the same argument that's used in the case against marital rape as well. You know, where the argument is that the courts cannot create a new right offense, but the offense already exists. It is simply a question of extending it, you know, beyond this bizarre exclusion.
Okay.
And it's the same thing here.
Just, Kotia, for the benefit of our viewers, how was there, you know, two sides to what the Supreme Court ruled last time? On the one hand, they said that same-sex marriage presently is illegal. But on the other hand, how did they say that there were aspects of the present law which was discriminatory?
Thanks for this conversation, Vishnu, and this discussion and the spotlight on this issue again. I think we need to understand that marriage is a foundational institution of society. And to exclude certain individuals from this institution is what the petitioners are arguing is unconstitutional. And so let's not make this about whether India is ready for marriage equality. I don't think we are here fighting that battle. I don't think anyone on this panel can claim to have an answer to that. Let's be focused, and we have to be technical and ask ourselves whether existing laws in India allow the exclusion of specific people from such an important institution of marriage. Marriage is intrinsically important. You know, I've grown up watching movies. I've seen my parents and my friends' parents. It's a fundamental part of family in our and all other societies. And we feel excluded if someone tells us that we don't have the right to participate in that institution. But also, as we've made the point, and the court has accepted this, that marriage brings with itself a bouquet of rights, financial rights, legal rights, rights to be able to live. We've been together for the past 16 years. In fact, we met in July of 2008. It's been exactly 16 years.
Congratulations.
If we were not a queer couple, we would have been married by now, many years ago, in fact. And all we're asking for is to be allowed that right and to be allowed that option.
Okay. Congratulations, firstly. But let me just go across to Deshrath and Nigam. The other aspect of this is, you know, Kotia was alluding to that, rights associated with marriage. It's not just marriage for the sake of a certificate which says that you're married. It's also about associated rights. So, for example, the petition says the majority opinion compounds its errors, that's their argument, by refusing to recognize queer couples' right to adopt on the basis that such right is available only to married couples and that there is an intelligible differentia between married and unmarried couples when it comes to adoption. On what basis, Deshratanji, can we argue that a gay couple are less capable as parents in adopting a child?
Well, Vishnu, there are two aspects here, recognition to a queer marriage and certain rights. And the Supreme Court was certainly, you know, concerned about the rights. They didn't want to give a legal status to same-sex marriage, but they were concerned about the rights. And in fact, some statements have also come from politicians that we can look into this matter, how to deal with certain rights that can be given. So there is
no discrimination. Deshratanji, how do you feel about it? Do you believe that when it comes to adoption?
Let me answer that, Vishnu. Vishnu, as the law stands today, these are not fundamental rights. The right to marriage is arising out of a statute, a particular act or a particular law. And we are a society governed by rule of law. So the Supreme Court will not try to get out of that particular law and to create a class of marriage, which the parliament has not done so. So we have to establish that. And second aspect is that when you claim equality, equality is between similarly situated people. Here, there is a man and woman marriage. Then there is a same-sex marriage. They are not similarly situated. So the right to equality that we talk about in the courts is between similarly situated people. Our law, as it stands today, does not place two sets of people on the same footing. Therefore, unless this law is set aside, then only and a similar law.
I understand the legal argument. I'm asking you, as a humanist and as a sensitive Indian national, if two people are able to bring stability, joy, happiness, and everything else into the life of a child they have adopted, what's wrong with it? I mean, it's humanity at the end of the day, which is the bedrock of our constitution, of our rights, right?
Certainly. No, Vishnu, that is what I said. Even the Supreme Court was concerned about the rights. And they did spend some time in the judgment about certain rights and protections to be given to them. That is where they have not gone beyond those rights and giving legal status. That can be considered, you know, Government of India or through legislation, their rights can be protected as you're talking of adoption or certain financial rights in the banks and or similar rights. You know, certain things can be worked out. Short of giving legal status, we as a country, you know, if a parliament is able to pass a law, then we are ready for it. We are ready for such kind of a legislation as Rahul Ishwar was also talking about. Social acceptance is reflected in the parliament. And if the parliament is willing to make a law, nobody will have a problem. I think there will be a larger social acceptance to it. And therefore, as of now, the law stands. It does not give them the fundamental right. It is being presumed that it is a fundamental right, but the law does not.
Okay.
We may have our, you know, concerns and sympathies for the rights of these people, but the fact remains that rights can be, we should be focusing as of now. When a drastic changes in law comes, you go step by step. Otherwise, society is not ready. You take these rights, tell the government, discuss with the government, take certain rights, then we look for the next step. You know, this is how the society transforms and changes and evolves.
Okay. I'm running out of time, but I want to go back to Utkarsh just briefly. You also argue that the court has moved away in its judgment from the promises of equal moral membership that it made to gay couples in the Navtej Johar judgment. And by doing so, the court has entrenched once again a doctrine of separate and unequal. What do you mean?
Well, Vishnu, I think as we've already said multiple times, there is, after Navtej Johar, sexual orientation is a protected identity under Article 15 on which there can be no discrimination, and it's the responsibility of the court to uphold our rights. So there, again, there's no fundamental right to marriage conversation. It's a question of discrimination. When the court allows some sections of society to access this institution and not others for no rational basis, it's discriminatory and treats us as second-class citizens. But may I also just point out, especially from the 377 experience to Rahul's point and Mr. Nigam's point, that even in 2013, this argument was made about society's not ready. This is the domain of parliament. We have to go slow. And yet within 5 years, the same Supreme Court with the same law, without any changes in the doctrine of separation of powers, read down Section 377 and apologized for the atrocities committed on the queer committee in the name of community, in the name of the law. So the exact same, we believe, should happen now with this. An error has been made, which is apparent on the face of the record. But the court has an opportunity to correct it, because this idea that society is not ready. I mean, if you look at there were no protests on the streets when this litigation was happening, as has happened in many other countries. This didn't come up in the Karnataka Assembly elections or the Lok Sabha elections. Our society is actually much more inclusive than I think Rahul and Mr. Nigam are giving us credit for. And I don't think there will be any upheaval or outright opposition on the streets just because we legalize this institution.
Okay.
And make...
I just last word to Rahul Ishwar. Rahul, literally 1 minute. Mira, I won't be able to come to you because I'm out of time. But just to balance this, Rahul, go ahead. Yes.
Utkarshi, due respect to your fight, we respect that. I believe world over, people like Pope Francis has been very accepting, and he said, who am I to judge? In our land, RSS Pujaniya Sarsang Chalak has evolved into a much more nuanced position, and all the communities has been more accepting. But, you know, please don't think we have any kind of a discriminatory attitude. Society needs more learning, understanding, evolution, sensitization. That's a realistic picture of society, you know, Desha Tanuganji or myself, we are portraying to you. But that is not an opposition. Maybe after some time...
All right, maybe after some time. Interrupting you, sorry, apologies, only because I'm out of time on this, but I do take your point, Rahul, that perhaps... it's not time as yet, is what you're arguing. There needs to be more education. The petitioners in this case say that this is the perfect time. We'll leave it there, revisit this conversation later. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us.